This from the Wall Street Journal this week. The 21% U.S. corporate tax rate is the biggest single variable in the sprawling 2025 tax debate. We'll talk about what's going to happen in 25 in a minute. The two parties are trying to turn the dial in opposite directions. The rate could climb as high as 28% from 21 if Democrats sweep November's elections, and move as low as 15% if Republicans gain full power. We're talking about the taxes that corporations pay. President Biden's plan for a 28% rate reverse would reverse half of the Republicans' 2017 rate cut, pushing the U.S. corporate rate back near the highest among major economies. Each percentage point is worth more than $130 billion over a decade in tax revenue, giving the largest U.S. companies an outsized interest in the election's outcome. Mike Miller is an economics professor at Western Washington University and a professor emeritus over at DePaul, where we first met him. Mike, thanks for joining us today. How are you?
I'm doing really well, John. It's great to talk to you again.
Yeah, as always. Why is this a sprawling 2025 tax debate? What happens in 25, Mike?
There was a change in the tax law in 2017 under Mr. Trump, and the only way he can get it through Congress and get it all signed was if they agreed that it would sunset, that most of the rates would sunset. So the tax rates that we pay as individuals and so forth are all going to either be continued, I would think, if Mr. Trump gets elected. And Mr. Biden has promised that he will undo all of the Trump tax cuts if he is reelected. So it's going to be quite a battle for those particular taxes. The corporate tax is not part of that particular arrangement, but there's going to be a tax battle for sure over the what rates will be in 2025.
Well, if it's not the corporate taxes that are going to sunset and then have to be either renewed or established at some new level, are those individual income tax rates then?
Yeah, it's the individual income tax rates that that have to be debated. But see, the Democrats, there's this belief that corporations, and to use the expression that is used, for example, by the Democrats, they have to pay their fair share. And in the minds of the Democrats, the cut in the corporate tax that Mr. Trump was able to get through was simply unfair, that the corporations aren't paying enough. And therefore, if Mr. Biden gets control of both, you know, both houses of Congress as well as the presidency, then he will raise it back up because that's the fair thing to do.
With the cooperation of the Senate, and there's enough rogue senators, it seems to me, these days, that even if you control the Senate, it doesn't mean you're going to get all of the votes. But I take your point. And I guess the question is, are companies paying a quote-unquote fair share or an appropriate share? Let's not talk about fair. That's too charged a word. But are they paying an appropriate amount?
Well, you know, John, that's a real debate because the assumption is that corporations pay taxes. Now, within the law, corporations are considered people in that they have free speech rights and so forth. And many, including economists, many people have concluded, therefore, that corporations pay taxes. But we all know that corporations don't pay taxes. They remit taxes. In other words, they send tax dollars to the government. But you and I, as the customers, or the owner of the firm, ultimately pays taxes. As Milton Friedman often said, only human beings can pay taxes. Corporations can't. So the idea that somehow the corporations have to pay their fair share, it's almost like we're passing the need to raise taxes onto some other being, and we're not. We're simply putting it again upon ourselves.
But it seems like given the profitability, the phrase greedflation came up in a podcast I host called The Mincing Rascals. It would seem, given the profitability of some of these companies, that rather than remitting taxes, they're keeping it for themselves or their shareholders, that they ought to share a little bit more of that money, Mike.
Well, I know that's the argument, but let's remember who the shareholders are. You know, I retired from DePaul, and I'm making extra money while working at Western, and I draw Social Security, which I started doing at 70. And the thing is, I need those. I need dividends, for example, or returns from stocks, because my only retirement funds are the dollars that my wife and I saved to live off of, you know, in retirement. So it's not just rich people who earn money when corporations make money. Again, you can't think of the corporation as some separate entity that somehow exists beyond human beings. Friedman's point is that the corporation is essentially people. And if a tax has to be paid, it's going to come out of one of three groups of people. It's going to come from the owners, in that they pay the taxes and therefore they get less profit. It'll come from the workers, in that the owners will have to, in a sense, cut their pay to remain competitive if taxes are high. Or right. Third, of course, what the firm will do is they'll pass the cost of the higher taxes onto you and me in the form of a higher price. So you and I ultimately pay the tax.
Well, considering that the country is $34 trillion in debt, here's a quote from Senate Finance Committee Chairman or a member. Well, is he the chair? Senator Mark Warner from Virginia. He said, "It's interesting when I hear from some corporate CEOs who argue for a more competitive tax rate, but then also complain about our $34 trillion debt." I'm going to pause here, Mike, but I want you to speak to the fact that somebody needs to pay more taxes, because we can't continue to go down this path. At least I don't think. Economist Michael Miller is talking to us about the different proposals that the Democrats and Republicans have with individual and corporate taxes. Depending on who controls the Congress, we might go from 21% to 15%, or we might go as high as 28%. Mike was reminding us that when we say corporations need to pay taxes, that means people are going to pay taxes, and it might be you and higher prices. So, Mike, I asked you, well, then what are we going to do? Do we need more revenue, and who's going to pay?
Well, there's two sides to this. First off, if you think you can do it through the corporate tax, the unfortunate thing is that corporate taxes, as a total, as of right now, is only 8% of the total income of the federal government. So even if we were to raise the rate, there isn't simply enough money there to, say, close the deficit of $2 trillion. That number is a big number, $130 billion per each point over 10 years. But that's $13 billion a year. And the federal government spends, what, $6 or $7 trillion? So it's really tiny. So the only place where the money could come from would essentially be from the income tax for people like you and me. But if you look at the data historically, what economists often do is they compare a particular number to as a percent of gross domestic product. If you look at revenue that the federal government takes in as a percent of gross domestic product, we are at historic highs. The government is taking in a lot of money. But if you look at spending as a percent of GDP, we are higher essentially than we have ever been. And what's interesting about that, we're having all of this spending occur while the economy is essentially at full employment, where the economy is growing at its potential. So normally you would not try to spend a lot of extra money to stimulate the economy when the economy is already doing well. But if
I'm not, talking, Mike. I've got a few things to say, but finish that thought. Go ahead.
Sure. Okay, so if the only way that we could raise more money to try to close the deficit, assuming that the spending is money that we want to spend, you're going to have to tax the middle class. As of right now, the top 1% of wage earners in the country. Pay 46% of all income taxes, and the top 10% pay 75%. So, and those two rates, by the way, are the highest in the world. Our rich pay a larger percent of the total taxes than any other country in the world. What other countries do that have large, what we would call a welfare state, is that taxes are paid across the board. The middle class pays a substantial amount of taxes, but they get in return a substantial amount of services from the government.
Yeah.
So if we want to be like them, we're going to have to tax the middle class.
Well, I don't know that I want to be like them, but I want to do something about it. And one number that jumped out at me was you said that corporations probably can't close the gap because they only pay 8% of the total revenue brought in. Well, that number seems pretty small to me, Mike.
It is. It's small. It's because of the nature of where the profits are and how many of us there are and how much money you and I make. Corporations, of course, do make billions of dollars worth of profits and so forth, which we tax, but you and I make trillions of dollars of income. So that's where the money is. Now, I've seen figures as high as in the past that corporations were paying about 10%. But, you know, the corporations could continue to pay a lot of money in taxes. But if you and I are taxed, in a sense, because we're doing better, we're taxed more, then the corporate becomes a smaller percentage, even though it's not because we're cutting their taxes, it's because the amount that we pay is going up. We'd have to look at the figures to see if that is the case.
Mike, I got about 30 seconds left here, but then do you have just a sort of ballpark approach for us? I mean, what would you ask the Congress to do?
I think we have to look at it through two lenses. We have to look at it economically. And Milton Friedman would essentially say, for example, that the corporate rate of zero makes sense. It doesn't politically. So that has to be off the table. And so if I were, I think the 21 is competitive. I think the 21 was a good compromise. I would not, even though I'm a Republican, I would not lower it to 15. It is a political mistake. The Republicans will pay a heck of a price for taking that action. So from a political standpoint as well as an economic standpoint, I would leave it at 21.
So when this sunsets, say, in 25, you would just say keep it where it is?
Yes. If I were, you know, you're King John, if I were King Mike, I would leave it where it is.
I'm not sure you and I would be in the same kingdom all the time, Michael, but
no, we would not.
But that's why I enjoy
war, John.
Yeah. Well, no, we would not. And that's why I always ask you to come on and give us your insight. And it really is insightful. Michael Miller is an economics professor in Washington, used to be in these parts. He was at DePaul. We'll call you again, Mike. Thanks for your thoughts today.
You're welcome, John.
So there's a place in Beverly called Nicky's, and Paul Kostopanayiotou is the owner of what is a mainstay in the southwest suburbs. Thanks for joining us today, Paul. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Hey, good, John. Thanks for having me. Pretty good pronunciation there of my last name.
Really been working on that. Let's hear you say it. Can you say it any better than I just did?
Kostopanayiotou.
Ah, so I was close. What kind of name is that, Paul?
It is Greek.
Yeah, it sounds that. So you're a Greek family then, and this has been a family business, Nicky's, for a while, right?
You know, it has. So my parents are both immigrants from Greece. So my father had started one of the original Nicky's on 47th and Kedzie in the Brighton Park area. So I used to work for him for many years.
So you guys are a restaurant, but you also have a pretty vibrant music scene?
We do. So we were located, when I first bought Nicky's, we were on the corner of 103rd and Western in a little small strip mall. So about 4 years ago, we purchased the property right down the street, and we built the restaurant out of shipping containers. And I know there's five of them. We stacked them, painted them blue. You can't miss us. So we do have an extensive food menu, extensive music lineup, all local musicians, local artists. So I like bringing the community together.
I want to talk about the music, but just give me a rundown of the menu. Tell me what's popular there. What are you especially proud of?
You know, we are a high-end, elevated street food menu. We've got everything from the Chicago classics, gyros, big babies, Italian beefs, to lobster rolls, crab cake sandwiches, salmon burgers, lobster ceviche. So wide range. Our salads are probably the most popular thing on our menu.
So not just a Greek menu then?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. I think there's a few items on the menu that we have are Greek, and one is a dito kaftiri, which is a spicy feta dip We do carry two Greek wines, and we have our oven-roasted Greek chicken and our chicken that we marinate that is my mother's recipe that we serve daily in the restaurant.
So talk to me about the music scene then. How do you do that, and who's going to be there?
So we have music pretty much every night on our patio, and it ranges from singer-songwriters playing one of our patios to we've partnered up with Beverly Records, which is one of the original record stores in Chicago. So John plays every Thursday night here on the patio from 6 to 9. He's wonderful. He has a themed show every night, and he tells stories about the songs, and that's always cool. And tomorrow, we actually are having one of our parking lot parties where we close on our parking lot, and it's called the Beverly Chill. So there's some DJs that are coming in. They're going to be playing house music. So I like to bring a lot of the different genres into the neighborhood. And along with that, we have a garage that has been turned into an art gallery by the local Art Alliance in the neighborhood, Beverly Art Alliance. So they're having an exhibit tomorrow also. So really excited about the event tomorrow.
Yeah, no kidding. But pretty much all summer long then, every night, there's some live music?
There is music every night on one of our two patios. We have two patios, and then we have a summer series concert that we probably do two shows a month where we'll close on our parking lot. But we're playing music every night. We have an extensive happy hour menu, so folks can come on and listen to some tunes and get some great craft beer and cocktails.
So that summer, that seven series concert series, or that seven shows, can you just give me a couple of names or styles of music there?
Yeah, absolutely. So as I said, tomorrow we've got the Beverly Chill, but we've got a band next week playing. It's a really big Southside band called Caution. So they are kind of a cover Grateful Dead band. We've got the Ron Burgundies, who have a great following on the South Side too. We've got some bluegrass folks coming in playing. So yeah, really excited about all the different genres.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, the summer's been good for you, I guess. We haven't had a lot of rain. Is it too hot out there?
You know, this week's been a little bit hot, but you know, I'd rather have the sunshine than the rain. You know, right now for business too.
One last thing about that, Paul, just as a business owner on the Southwest side there, how's business been? What's staffing like? People are back after COVID, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, we've been really fortunate here at the restaurant. We have a great team, so we really haven't experienced any staffing issues. I like to take care of my people. Business has been really good. I think the quality of our food and our price points and our overall vibe in the restaurant is something that the community supports, and I'm really thankful about it. And you know, I love some of these segments where we can promote Beverly.
So sounds like that's what you're doing too. Yeah, as much as selling sandwiches and sodas. Sounds like this is just a mainstay of the community, too. Well, have a great summer, Paul. Congratulations in advance. And Paul Kostapaniatou, or something very close to that, is the owner of Nikki's.
That is the first time. Yeah, thanks so much. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
I'm getting good at it. Nice to talk to you today, Paul. Thanks for joining us. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, and here's more business news then with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago's Federal Reserve President says the Fed should be able to cut interest rates if inflation keeps cooling. In a broadcast interview, Austin Goolsbee says the May Consumer Prices Report was encouraging and showed a second straight month of lower inflation. He says more inflation readings like that will encourage the Fed to cut rates perhaps later this year. The Fed wants to see inflation closer to its 2% target. The Fed kept rates unchanged at its latest meeting and reduced the estimated number of rate cuts this year from 3 to just 1. The restaurant replacing Dick's Last Resort in Chicago's Marina City Towers finally has an opening set for July. According to Crane's, Legal Seafoods has two floors in the space at 315 North Dearborn, with private event spaces and outdoor terraces overlooking the Chicago Riverwalk. The restaurant had planned to open over the winter, but there were issues that caused delays. PPX Hospitality Brands is the parent company based in Massachusetts. It has 26 restaurants, most of them on the East Coast. It also owns Smith & Wolensky Restaurant Group. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And it's a Mr. Fizz Friday. Our gardening guru, Jim Fizzell, wants to talk about safety as you grow your own food and other things in the yard. And I will share how my grandmother lost some fingers after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. Thank you, Chevy dealers. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Hey there, Mr. Fizz. What's going on?
Well, first of all, happy Friday. And I want to talk a little bit about safety today. But first, we're having a pretty severe drought here in the Chicagoland area. And we need to prioritize things that we would hate to lose, especially newly planted trees. If you're going to water anything, water your newly planted trees. You can let the hose run at the bottom of the tree or get one of the gators that you put on. And for your big trees, put the sprinkler out to cover the area under the tree and let it run until you've got 2 inches of water in a coffee can that you set out there to measure it. When you got 2 inches of water, that's enough for the tree for about two, maybe 3 weeks. Anyway, let's talk about safety. We take a lot of things for granted, even if they're dangerous. You know, we get used to them. We don't even appreciate that they are a danger unless all of a sudden something happens. Household things like knives and barbecue grills, chemicals, and also power tools. You know, some of us use a lot of different kinds of power tools like saws and edgers and so forth. Remember that those things can get you if you're not careful. And keep under control. Don't exceed the capacity of yourself or your equipment. If you're not familiar with things like heights and so forth, stay off ladders. And if you're not familiar with power tools, don't use them.
You know, Jim, your warnings about yard safety remind me of my grandmother who insisted on mowing her own grass well into her 80s. And one day when the grass got clogged up coming out of the chute of her Toro, she reached in to try to knock it loose and lost parts of her fingers.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing what happens. We had a friend who was a doctor, a surgeon, mind you. He was cutting his grass. The hedge needed to be trimmed. So of all crazy things, he picked the Toro up by the shroud around the thing. And of course, your fingers get in there. He took off three of the fingers on one hand.
Yikes.
Can you imagine that?
Mr. Fizz, Jim Fizzell, our gardening guru. June Dairy Month continues. Today's National Smoothie Day, and it's National Peaches and Cream Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
And Logue joins us, a writer specializing in business and finance. Her most recent book is Options Trading. There's a piece in businessinsider.com about this. And thanks for joining us. You're on WGN.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
That's a topic that's come up for us. In general, describe for me what's happening with people 67 years old, give or take a few years.
It's an interesting situation. A lot of people who are nearing retirement would like to work longer to build up their savings, to maintain their health insurance before they can qualify for Medicare. And a lot of people just like being in the mix. They like having coworkers. They like learning new things. But at the same time, there's an enormous amount of evidence that age discrimination is a real thing, and that as people get older, a lot of employers are less likely to hire them, less likely to want them in customer-facing jobs. They're more vulnerable at layoffs. And this creates a really interesting dichotomy. We have a labor shortage in this country. Economically, we would benefit if people worked longer and paid into Social Security longer.
Yeah.
But at the same time, employers are not as interested in hiring older workers.
Are older workers more expensive for employers? I mean, if you've been at a company for 30 years and now you're going to be there for 40 years, I presume it would be easier to let you go and go get a 25-year-old.
In some cases, that is true. A lot of employers are looking to reduce labor costs, and older workers tend to make more. Another interesting factor seems to be that employers, a lot of managers prefer working with people their own age and younger, and a lot of them think that the young
Hold on one second, Ann. And hold on 1 second. Pete, hang up. Let's try it again. This is a very interesting conversation that I want to be able to hear, and I know you do too. We're talking to Ann Logue, and she's got a piece in Business Insider. And it's just about that dilemma. And, you know, the question that I have, we'll get her back on the line in a second, is, so what's the solution? Do we need to raise the retirement age? And some of you who are in that category would like to work, but you can't, either because of health reasons or this happens, you're caring for somebody else who's disabled or has health complications. So how do we continue to empower these people, employ these people, get them to pay taxes, get them to pay into Social Security? Maybe that's the most important thing of all. Whatever your desires are, notwithstanding, what maybe we really need to do is continue to protect Social Security accounts. We need to keep funding that. The conversations about that are, well, do we raise the age at which you begin to take Social Security benefits? Do we raise the ceiling on contributions? There's a number of options there. And thanks for joining us still. What are the solutions then? I mean, what do we do to either keep these people employed or to get employers to find them attractive? Is there, you know, is it a government solution? What do you do?
I mean, some of it is going to be a cultural shift where a lot of employers are going to have to maybe do training with their staff, training with their hiring managers and their operational managers to keep workers in place longer, because there is a labor shortage. There are a lot of open jobs. Right now, unemployment is the lowest that it's been in years and years, but you also have people who would like to work and can't get the call back. Yeah. So that, I think, is cultural, and that has to come from the employer side. Age discrimination is illegal, but like a lot of forms of discrimination, it can also be hard to document or to prove.
I wonder if...
I think from a government perspective, if we're looking at the issue of shoring up Social Security, then if employers aren't interested in having workers be on the job longer, then the answer is going to have to be higher Social Security taxes.
That's what I was mentioning a moment ago. And I would rather we find a way to keep these people in the game than do that. It's a very interesting piece, and it's timely. Retirement crisis. Boomers need to work longer. No one will hire them, says Ann Logue, who also writes about this in a book. And we'll talk about that another day. We're out of time this time, but thanks for joining us, Ann.
Thank you so much for having me, and I'd love to come back.